right, welcome everyone. My name is Mr. Joe. I'm the host with the most on our Youth Force Chronicles podcast, a podcast for teens by teens. And today we have Doc.
Hello.
We have Levi.
What's up?
And our special guest, who has helped design some of the most iconic things that you have seen in some classic movies. And just to list a couple of them, we have Battlestar Galactica, Star Trek, the motion picture, Tron, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and Back to the Future. And that special guest is Mr. Andrew Probert.
How do you do, everybody?
All right. And so now let's get into the show.
Are you ready?
Okay, so Mr. Probert, we're so glad to have you on the show. Do you prefer Mr. Probert or is it Mr. Andrew?
How about just Andrew?
Andrew? All right, I will go for that instead. So, Andrew, so glad to have you on the show. Again, this is a podcast for teens by teens, and we want to give our students an opportunity just to talk with you, learn more about what you do as a career and how you got to where you're at. And so I'm going to let them have the floor. Let's start with Levi.
So my first question for you is, what exactly is your like job title? Like, what is your exact job and what do you do?
Well, my unofficial title is all around miracle worker, but typically I'm known as a concept artist, concept designer. And that being said, I also do storyboards, illustrations. We'll get into more of that as we go along.
Doc, do you have any questions?
Yeah. My first question for you would be, when you're going through the process of creating your concepts, how do you really get your inspiration and how do you find what you're going to base your next prop or machine on?
Well, that if I'm working on a Hollywood production or even an independent film, my inspiration comes from the script, because the script is telling the story and the producers are relying on me to provide visuals for what their hardware might look like in the story. So if it's super advanced technology, I would approach the visuals for that on one level. If it's technology that's only like 5 years from now, I would approach that on a different level. So that's pretty much where I start, is the script. I would typically go through a script. And as you may or may not know, scripts are written on one side of the paper with a blank on the left side, type on the right side. And if I come across hardware that I think I'm going to be involved with, I'll start putting down initial thoughts, just sketching them out on the left side of the open script to sort of give me a starting point, because that would be my initial impression of what this thing might look like. So I start from there, and after I do that run through, then I talk to the producers and other creatives and find out what they're doing and how I can contribute.
Okay, I have a question. This is Mr. Joe here. What was your favorite script that you had read through and that gave you some of your ideas?
I would probably say Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Good choice. Why was that one your favorite script?
Well, because as you said in the intro, I did work on Star Trek: The Motion Picture, but that was in Star Trek terms, kind of a familiar neighborhood. Now, The Next Generation was to take place 85 years after the motion picture timeline. And so it gave me an opportunity to really push the boundaries as to what all of this hardware might look like that far in advance. You know, we went from hot air balloons to flying in space in 60 years. So what would an 85-year jump look like in Star Trek, you know?
So I have another question for you. So can you just, kind of explain how you got your job and like, what was the path that you went through?
Well, It's going to be a little funny, but I really didn't do a lot of work to get where I am. It just, everything sort of fell into place for me to get there, and I'll explain that. When Star Wars came out, I was in school. I went to school at Art Center College of Design, which is now in Pasadena, California. And I had an opportunity, a lot of my classmates had an opportunity to see some of the concept work that was being done for that film. And it was all very exciting. And the film was being advertised with paintings, these gorgeous paintings done by the artist Ralph McQuarrie. And in one of the articles, it said that these were done by an LA-based artist, Los Angeles-based artist, Ralph McQuarrie. I really wanted to meet this guy. So just out of the blue, I got a Los Angeles phone book and I looked him up and called him.
Wow.
And it was like, hello. I says, hi, I'm calling for Ralph McQuarrie. He says, this is Ralph. What can I do for you? I says, well, I'm Andrew Probert and ... I would like to ... interview you for my school newspaper. He said, yeah, what school? I said, I'm going to Art Center. He says, yeah, I went there for a little bit. Come on over. Jaw drop. So I went over. I got to know Ralph. I did interview him. The school did print the interview, and he and I sort of got to know each other. And as it turned out, my car broke down just almost when I was getting ready to graduate, just a couple of semesters ahead. And so I called Ralph up and I said, Ralph, do you know what's going on? I told him my situation. I says, I'd really like to maybe get my feet wet and, you know, get a job in a production. Do you have any recommendations? He said, well, I'm working on two shows right now. One of the shows is Buck Rogers, and the other show is a TV pilot called Star World. And I found out that Star World was the effects were being done by John Dykstra and the rest of the group that did the Star Wars special effects, including their concept guy, Joe Johnson. Well, after seeing his work before, I really wanted to get into this and maybe learn some tricks. So I said, yeah, I'll, you know, put my name in. I would rather, I think, go to Star World. So he sent me down there. I got interviewed and they hired me to do some sketches of helmets. And, so I started producing helmets, and they said, well, we want you to do the rest of the suit. These helmets have a scanner built into them, and this is going to be like a robot kind of thing. And so while I'm designing this, they changed the name from Star World to Battlestar Galactica, and I ended up designing the Cylons. Isn't that amazing?
So, oh, yeah. That's
all, yeah, I did a all whole, from a phone yeah. book, huh?
Yeah, so I did a whole bunch of other little things here and there on the show in addition to that. And it was for the 2-hour movie of the week, the pilot episode.
Okay.
By that time, of course, my car had been repaired and I was ready to go back to school the next semester, which I did.
Wow.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's only part one of this whole thing. I'm now in school. I'm like just a month or so out of graduating. And I get a call from Ralph. And he says, guess what? I'm working on this Star Trek movie. Well, I was a Trekker from day one. I says, they're making a movie of Star Trek? It's like, yeah, I says, I'm doing some concept work. But I got called up north to work with George, quotes, on the next Star Wars.
You mean George Lucas?
Yeah.
No.
that was Ralph. He says, so I can't continue with this Star Trek project, and they need somebody, so I gave them your name. Is that okay?
Dang, that's...
Yes.
That's crazy. Okay.
Yeah, so after I woke up, I said, yeah, that would be fine. So they interviewed me. They did hire me. And I got went to Robert Abel and Associates, who was doing the special effects for the motion picture, and I met their art director. Now, you have to understand, Robert Abel and Associates was at the time an award-winning visual effects house in Hollywood, and they did a lot of commercials, a lot of leading-edge commercials for the day. And so it was a good company to go with. And so when I met the art director, when I was hired, he said, because I want to maintain a continuity in what we provide for this movie. He said, so I want you to design all of the human hardware in the show, because that way it'll look like it came out of one organization, one unified look from Starfleet.
Wow, so you got to do all of it.
Yeah, I did get to do all of it.
Wow, that's awesome.
So it's totally awesome. That awesome list included the space office complex, the dry dock, the Enterprise, the Vulcan shuttle, and support craft being the travel pod and a little workbee utility vehicle and various other things. So that was way cool.
So in a way, you kind of made Star Trek, Star Trek.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, I didn't do everything on my own. I had to run everything by Richard Taylor, who was my art director. And in fact, he said, I told you you're going to do the Enterprise, but I want to do the warp engines because I have this idea that how I want them to look. Well, I'm not going to argue with the art director. It's like, okay, you do the engines. And what he came up with, I thought was amazing. And so that also gave me kind of a benchmark around which to design the rest of the Enterprise, you know, the way it looked, that kind of an art deco look to it. And it was pretty amazing.
Yeah. Just to follow up here, how stressful was the interview? Like, how hard was it? Did you just go in there, present your stuff, and you were hired, or was it a long process, many other applicants, and it was really tough to get in there, or did it just work out?
Well, it did not hurt me one bit to be recommended by Ralph McQuarrie, for one thing. So that was kind of a shoe up, and it's not like I went in there, you know, with no expectations. Of course, I brought a book, you know, a portfolio, and we talked about what was needed. They understood that I had been a Star Trek fan for a long time, so I understood the history of the franchise, and that helped.
Yeah.
And there, as far as I know, there weren't any other applicants for that position at the time, and time being money, they needed somebody quickly to fill Ralph's shoes. And although I probably never could fill Ralph's shoes, I guess I was good enough to get the job.
That is just the fact that you replaced Ralph McCoy as a concept artist is just crazy to me, because I'm well aware with his work, and it's just amazing that you got to work with him and do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's crazy in my head too, still to this day.
So what exactly was your, I'm going to switch it up here real quick. So what exactly was your involvement in like the Back to the Future stuff?
I went in to talk to Robert Zemeckis, who had done films like The Polar Express, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Romancing the Stone, and many others. So I went to talk to Robert, and he told me that they were looking for a storyboard artist. So I had done storyboards for a while, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and several other shows and productions. And, you know, I brought some of my work because I knew that that was the interview I was in there for. And I said, so this is a car that jumps into the future. And he described it. He says, yeah, it's going to be this DeLorean, and it's going to have all this stuff in the back that's going to make it a time machine. Hmm. And I said, so, hint, 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 who's going to be your designer for that? And he said, oh, we got Ron Cobb. I was like, oh. Well, I've been a Ron Cobb fan for a long time. And so it's like, okay, you know, I'm thinking if you're going to get anybody, he would be the guy to get. So it's like, okay, then let's do it. So I went into Steven Spielberg's compound there on the Universal lot called Amblin productions. And Stephen had made this kind of little, not a fortress, but he made this kind of like a little estate is what his studio looked like, more of a Spanish adobe style with a wall around it. And that was Amblin. And so I went to work there. It was beautiful. In doing storyboards, obviously, if the story is going to be about a car that has magical stuff on it, you got to have something to draw. Ron Cobb had not come on the production yet, so I didn't know what it was going to look like. I didn't know what he was going to come up with.
So you didn't know, like, what vehicle they were going to use?
Well, I knew it was a DeLorean.
Okay.
But I did not know what the final outcome would be because Ron hadn't designed it yet.
Okay.
What was your Sorry.
So I came up with designs on my own. You know, I sketched up a bunch of cars and picked one that I would use as a sort of plug-in, as a stand-in to whatever Ron comes up with. And when you're doing storyboards, people know that. If you don't know what a character looks like, what actor is going to play him or her, or if you don't know what a location is going to look like, you do generic stuff. So I did this DeLorean with stuff in the back. So Ron comes on, he designs in the car. So I at some point I switch up what I'm doing to kind of match what he provided. And he left the show to work on another picture called A Real Genius. And the producers looked at me and they looked at the drawings that I had done with the car before he came. And they said, well, we like what Ron has provided for us, but we want you to add some more stuff before it's actually built. So I took the project over, added the stuff that they wanted to see on the car, and it went into production. And then I went back to my storyboards.
Yeah.
So for that show, I was also able to provide the book covers. I did the painting for the comic book. A Match Made in Space was a hardback that Marty's dad did. So I did the comic book cover that that those farmers had, the Peabody's, with their Twin Pine ranch. And Marty crashes into the barn, if you remember, and they look at it and think it's a spaceship. And the kid has this picture on his comic book that is a spaceship of somebody that looks just like Marty in his radiation suit. So I modeled that after what used to be called EC Comics, EC comic books, back in the 50s. And then Match Made in Space was just based, of course, on Marty's visit to his dad. So got to do that. And I also ended up designing the original version of the show's logo type, the Back to the Future logo.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's cool.
So I had a pretty good run on that show.
Yeah. I was just wondering, so when he told you that you were going, that the design for the vehicle to bring them to the future was going to be a DeLorean, what was your reaction then? Because it seems like such a random item to use. That was my question.
Well, everybody knows that a car made of stainless steel is homogeneous with the workings of a flux capacitor. I mean, you knew that.
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah. Totally.
Actually, when they said that, I actually liked the DeLoreans. I thought that it was very cool. The story of DeLorean actually creating this car outside of the normal car industry, I was very, very much enamored with. So I knew the DeLorean. I loved the car and the story behind it. So, and that to me made Doc Brown seem even more quirky, that he would pick something, like you say, is kind of random.
But, yeah. It's definitely a unique vehicle.
Yeah.
So.
Especially if you get the time machine options.
I do have to ask something. Like, when you come up with your designs for all the things that you're creating, do you try to come up with some quirky names for them as well? I just... Because I think if I was to start making all these designs, I would want them to have like a unique name.
The only actual unique name, well, there's a couple. Thinking of Star Trek, the motion picture, when I was doing some concept sketches of the dry dock for that was enclosing the Enterprise on its, you know, prior to its going off to find V'ger, the script indicated that there was a lot of activity at trying to get the ship ready as quickly as possible to go on this mission. And so I envisioned these little craft darting all over the place, much like in a factory where you would see forklifts and other kinds of little vehicles, scooters and such.
Right.
And so I thought, you know, why not come up with this little one-person vehicle that could be attached to all kinds of work tools and other things to, you know, from pulling cargo to pushing parts into place and welding them or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we'll paint them yellow because yellow apparently is an easier color to see in space. And it also suggests that it's an industrial thing. And we'll put a black stripe on the back and we'll call it a bee, a work bee, because work bees are always flying around a hive doing busy things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So makes sense.
That's how that happened. I showed it to Richard and he said, yeah, that's a good idea. So that was a vehicle that wasn't in the script, but it contributed to the overall busy ambiance of the scene. So
yeah, to the environment.
The other thing was the Vulcan shuttle that came from Vulcan, bringing Spock to the Enterprise, and I named it Surak. And Surak in the original series was known as a very important historical figure in the Vulcan culture. So, but those are the only names I gave to anything. I mean, the script named them all, so I was left, you know, when it came to the Next Generation, I was designing this ship, and all of the starships are just like in today's Navy, are classes of ships, and that class of ship is typically the first ship that is commissioned with that name. So let's say the Yorktown aircraft carrier, other carriers that look like the Yorktown would be a Yorktown class carrier.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So I was talking to Gene Roddenberry about this new starship, and I said, you know, because it's smoother, it's got more of an organic look, you know, and the mission is a 5-year mission, we should maybe, I'm thinking, allude to the fact that it's kind of a peacekeeper, kind of an ambassador from Earth, and let's call it ambassador class. And Gene said, well, he says, you know, this is going to be a really big ship. How about Galaxy? We'll call it a Galaxy class. So that's how the Enterprise class got picked.
Wow. So just what was your favorite movie to work on? Like your favorite thing you worked on?
Huh.
Or maybe like the most fun and you enjoyed the most?
I hear what you're saying. I really don't know, because they all of the projects that I worked on were fun for different reasons.
Hmm.
So I can't really pick a favorite.
Okay.
Which one do you think shows off your best work?
Dang, two good questions in a row. Probably Star Trek The Next Generation, because it gave me a chance to really stretch and show some of my thinking. And so, and the fact that a lot of people, a lot of the right people in the show supported that. You know, I was doing concept work on that show before the production designer came aboard.
Yeah.
And the first thing they wanted me to design actually was the ship's bridge. I was the fifth person hired on the show, and they wanted to hire a designer quickly because they wanted to have a long time to kind of play with the bridge, since a good part of the show was spent on the bridge. They wanted everything to be satisfactory to them and to the needs of the production. So
right.
I started out doing that. It worked into several, you know, to the Enterprise and several other ships. But it gave me an opportunity, like I said, to kind of really push the envelope. And I was just lucky to have some credibility. And, you know, that made me very happy.
Well, that is so great to hear. So we have Jason back here. We're going to do a quick 30-second switch, and we're going to get him on here. Mr. Andrew, it was so much of a pleasure to get to hear from you.
Thank you.
And now I'm about to pass it off to Jason. So give us 30 seconds and we're going to switch it out.
Okay.
Hello. Hey, how you doing?
this must be Jason.
Yes, this is Jason. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Listen, I cannot begin to tell you how excited I am about this. I had to.
Go ahead. You can begin.
Yeah. So, thank you so much. I was the one that reached out to you on Instagram. And we listen. Hold on. I got to gather myself here because I'm just so excited about this.
Oh, you're so nice.
I even had to call in a favor because I was driving a bus. Like, we have to drive buses to pick our kids up for the Boys and Girls Club, and I was like, man, I want to be there for this. And so I called in and I said to one of my other colleagues, and I said, is there any way that you could just cover the other half of this so I can get there and at least talk to Mr. Probert about I just want to be here for the interview. And she's like, absolutely. So thank you, Elizabeth, for covering the last part of my route to be here to be able to interview such an icon. I was on the bus and I was just thinking about like what I wanted to talk to you about, because you come from the generation where, you know, in those days and those movies, you had those icons like the DeLorean, of course, and Ghostbusters, where props were actually a character, you know, and I'm just so excited because you're a big part of my childhood and everything. So,
well, thank you. The only problem is I bet there's several terrified children on that bus that you were driving so fast.
Yeah, well, you know, that's not the only time they've probably been. I'm just kidding. No, you're right. So, catch me up, guys. Where are we at right now?
Well,
we really didn't talk about much.
No.
Yeah, well, we recapped we were talking about the beginning of his career, how he first got started, how he was referred to working on Star Trek and later Back to the Future.
Wow.
And some of the works that he did on those sets and just kind of the beginning of his career.
Yeah, yeah.
So you pretty much missed everything.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, so we'll just... I don't know if they explained. I'm director of the program and everything over here, so we might revisit some of this stuff so that way I can kind of catch up with you guys. But the biggest questions that we were talking was, you know, the DeLorean, man. Like, that is probably like, would you say that that's the arguably the most infamous piece that you've worked on, or which one would you say would be the best?
A lot of people, it's really interesting. A lot of people do love the work on the DeLorean.
Mm-hmm.
I worked on a TV show that didn't last very long, but it's called Airwolf. Yeah. And that was about a helicopter that was a secret government weapon that was a pretty cool show.
Yeah, I remember that vaguely. I mean, I'm an 84 baby, so
yeah, Airwolf, well, yeah. Everybody can look it up on something, probably YouTube.
I would like to say that I will find my dad watching Airwolf every few months.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what are you watching? Because it was like, my dad showed me a lot of 80s shows, but that one was, he didn't really show me until later in my childhood. So, but yeah, I'll catch him watching Airwolf every now and then.
Well, did we talk about the DeLorean? Have we touched on that at all? Did we talk about why it was the DeLorean? Did you ask him those questions? Those are really good questions.
Yeah, I actually did. It was, well, I could let him explain it.
Sure. Yeah. Did you choose that, or was it the previous guy?
Once upon a time, in a movie studio far, far away.
It's not like the movie voice guy.
That's what I was thinking. I thought he played a recording.
Yeah.
The DeLorean had always been chosen as Doc Brown's car. And there's a funny story. The show was put together by two guys, Robert Zemeckis and Bob Gale. And Bob Gale tells a really funny story that that as they're working on the show, you know, there is quite prevalent in Hollywood for years and years and years something called product placement.
Yeah.
So, you know, if somebody wants to show, let's say, Heinz ketchup bottle, they'll contribute some money to the production so that when they're having their morning breakfast or whatever, there can be a Heinz ketchup bottle sitting there with the label showing. And it's a way to sneak in an advertisement.
And
apparently there was this kid working in the advertising department that kept coming into Bob and saying, what product can we use to get some more money for this show? He says, you know, I know exactly what. Instead of a DeLorean, how about if Doc Brown drives a Mustang? Oh. Mustang would be really cool.
Yeah.
It would have.
But not as cool as
DeLorean. Yeah, no, DeLorean. DeLorean would be way cooler.
I'm just going to say the DeLorean is probably, like, just one of the coolest looking cars ever.
So, continue with your story, though. We didn't want to interrupt you. We're just
so very Bob Gale turns to this guy, and he looks at him, somebody's nephew, and he says, a Mustang? He says, Doc Brown doesn't drive a frickin' Mustang. It's always going to be a DeLorean.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said earlier, a car made out of stainless steel is a much better conductor for the flux capacitor to hold into a time warp.
Obviously. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody knows that.
So was the flux capacitor part of what you created, or was that somebody else? Like,
well, Ron Cobb actually did a lot of the preliminary design work for the car. And as I said earlier, he left the show to do another show. And the producers wanted me to come in and add some additional detailing and so on. Originally, Ron and I both did interiors for the car.
Mm-hmm.
Mine was very designed. It was very specific. It had the flux capacitor actually up in the ceiling of the car between the doors. Because when Doc Brown is talking to Marty about you know, the flux capacitor, and this is how the car generates the time warp and all of that.
Yeah.
He's pointing to it. And I thought it would be much easier to see if it was right next to him above his head.
That makes total sense.
The interior that Ron Cobb came up with, however, looked and felt much more believable as something that Doc Brown would kludge together in building this machine. So most of Ron's ideas went straight into the interior, including the flux capacitor, which was behind the seats, you know, behind Doc Brown's head. And it's like, well, how are they going to show that? And of course, they do it with a quick camera cut, so you don't really notice that you can't see back there. But it's part of movie magic, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, I was telling the boys earlier before we were going through the questions and everything, and I was just like, you know, I still, when I watch that scene when the DeLorean is first introduced and it backs off that truck, and it gives you chills like every single time. Just because it's just so like powerful, like, and so, what is that like? Like, what is that like to know that that was part of something you created?
It was awesome, of course.
Yeah, I bet.
But, you know, I did the storyboards for that sequence. It's really kind of funny because we went out to the mall, and all of the key people were out there, and. Bob Zemeckis is looking the place over, and he says, "Okay." He says, "Doc Brown's truck, he's talking to me, Doc Brown's truck is going to be right there. Marty's going to be up there on the hill looking down, and then he's going to come down, and he's going to have a, you know, the car is going to come out, and he's going to have a scene with Doc Brown, and the bad guys, the terrorists or whatever, are going to come from there in their van.
Mm-hmm.
And Marty's going to try to escape over there, and then he's going to come around and time jump, and we're going to put a photo booth here for the bad guys to crash into. Now, go storyboard that.
That's so cool.
Wow.
I'll tell you what, real quick, and then you guys, your question. I was showing, so my son is like 2 years, 3 years old, and I'm slowly introducing him all these parts, right? And that scene, I Googled it on YouTube, or we YouTubed it, and the whole scene of like him, it was so cool watching him like get into it, even at 3 years old, and like being like, just excited to see Marty like getting in the DeLorean and then just jumping and going. So, but yeah, that is just so cool, man. I can't even, I still can't believe we're having this conversation, but, Levi, I think you had a question to ask him.
Yeah. So like, what story, like, how many storyboards did you do for Back to the Future? Like what percentage would you say of the movie you storyboarded?
Wow. You're asking me ancient history here, but let me think. I did the scene where Marty is following his dad, and his dad climbs up in a tree and is peeking at Lorraine, mm-hmm. falls out of the tree and is almost hit. Marty saves him. Okay. But I did that sequence. I did the mall sequence,
okay.
The entire mall sequence. I did the sequence where, you know, and then building onto that, the sequence where Marty actually time jumps into the Peabody's ranch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then he drives out and kills one of the pine trees.
Yeah. And it becomes, what is it? One Pine Mall instead of Two Pine Malls?
Lone Pine
Mall. Lone Pine Mall, yeah.
Instead of a Twin Pine.
So, and actually in the storyboards, they needed signs. You know, Twin Pines Mall and then Lone Pine Mall. And so in my storyboards, I came up with the signs that they actually used in the film.
Wow.
So that was kind of fun. And then when Marty was back in Hill Valley, you know, he actually crashes into a movie theater. And the movie theater is playing a movie which just jumped out of my head here. A movie starring Mickey Rooney called The Atomic Kid.
Mm.
Okay.
And the movie is about a uranium prospector out in the desert, and he stumbles into a test town that gets hit with an atomic bomb, and he just happens to be in one of the test houses and survives. And wow. So it's a funny, it's a comedy.
That's funny.
You'll be able to find it probably someplace.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So I suggested that would be kind of funny to be the marquee for, and it was appropriate for the 50s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense though. Those little Easter eggs are so cool because they're throughout the whole movie. When you watch it again, you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so in doing storyboards, you know, I did the whole sequence where Doc Brown is talking to Marty and, you know, tells Marty to get in the car, and then, you know, because they know that lightning is going to strike,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
the clock tower,
mm-hmm.
at a certain time, and so Marty has to time his connection with those cables at that moment.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, you know, as you're doing storyboards, you're looking at each scene in a very concentrated way,
mm-hmm.
and the scene was that Marty had written Doc Brown a letter explaining what was going to happen in the future and for him to be careful of these terrorists. And Doc Brown was very, very animate about not knowing his future.
Okay.
And he discovers this letter in the script, in the original script, he discovers the letter in his coat pocket where Marty hid it for him to find later. And he pulls it out and starts to read it, and he doesn't read it, and he says, "Marty, you know that I don't want to know anything about my future." And he's telling this to Marty, and he's tearing up this letter, mm-hmm. and he keeps tearing it up as he walks across the street, opens the door to his car, whatever it was, a Packard or some old car, stuffs it in the ashtray, slams the door, and continues to tell Marty about not wanting to know his future. And that's when the lightning hits the, or I mean, that's when the time comes up where Marty's supposed to get in his car.
Hmm.
And I went to Bob Gale and I said, "Bob, this telegraphs the fact that Doc Brown is going to have that note and we'll tape it back together." I said, "You don't want to telegraph that. You want it to be a surprise that mm-hmm. he eventually knows what's going on."
Yeah, because he puts a bulletproof vest on and then
yeah.
he shows him the letter. He's like, what about all that talk about messing up the time space-time continuum?
So, yeah, I had some ideas on how to fix that. And so we walked from Amblin Productions through a small gate, and now we're in Hill Valley. And I said, "Okay, this is where this is all going to happen. Let's walk through this and see if we can fix it."
Yeah.
And sure enough, we fixed it by actually having lightning start to hit around, and Doc Brown, suddenly lightning hits the cable and it falls.
Oh, yeah.
And so Doc Brown says, "Marty, you go get in the car. I'm going to go up and get this cable and fix it," or whatever he's talking. And so while he's talking, he takes that letter and shoves it back into his pocket, where people in the rush of things may not notice that that's what happened because he's so excited that, yeah. about everything else. So, yeah. So watch that scene if you haven't noticed it.
Well, it's funny you said that because like I've never really put that together. Like, where did he, cause he, it almost looked like he ripped it up and then threw it. Like, he's like, "Ah, I can't do this." And then rips it up. And then,
yeah, that's what I thought. I always wondered yeah. how he actually got the letter. Cause he just ripped it up and threw it and pretty walked cool, away. Huh? But I didn't, I didn't know that.
So I have a question too. And then Doc here, our Doc, not Doc Brown, our Doc he's talked about being like a movie composer. And how do you, because like, I think one of the things that makes this movie so memorable is the soundtrack and the composer, like that, those moments of intense, like the suspense is just so beautifully orchestrated. And like, mm-hmm. how did you, and I think those are one of those reasons why they make those iconic, like, and Spielberg is really good at this too, with, you know, E.T. and Jurassic Park even, but I know, and it's just this really cool hodgepodge of all these beautiful things coming together for one magical moment in a movie that like just sticks out for the rest of time, you know? And so how does that process go? You know, is it just like finding the right people, or is it just kind of like just, you know, having an idea of what to do, or is it just kind of like luck, you know? Like, I don't know. I was to ask that question, but
My answer to that would be yes.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Yeah, because it's just, you know, you just, again, like you just see these iconic moments, and you could pretty much ask, even this generation, the ones that we work with, you can ask them about Back to the Future, and they'll be like, "Yeah, I know what Back to the Future is."
Mm-hmm.
And they can name off at least two or three of the characters, but like those, and this is the problem I think with the movies nowadays, is we don't really have those connected moments of, oh my gosh, like the last one I can remember was Endgame with Marvel. And like there again, that's another one of those series where the props become more of a character, like the Infinity Gauntlet, you know,
as
something memorable to remember by. Like you can go to a store and pick it out. It's like, "Oh, that's Infinity Gauntlet." But you know, something that like you guys have created, like even with the Starship Enterprise, those are just such things that just, they kind of, you know, How do you get to those moments where you can piece all those together and make that something is what I'm asking.
Well, being a concept artist, you're not really privy to the rest of the production because mm-hmm. you're trying to get visuals out so they can build everything and get it all done on time. So, what I can say is that I certainly agree that most of the most fantastic movies, anywhere from like Gone with the Wind, The Ten Commandments, Ben-Hur, Psycho, The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, The Longest Day, Forbidden Planet had all electronic music. Mm-hmm. You know, all of those films have an amazing soundtrack. Star Wars, Back to the Future, all have these great soundtracks, and that supports so much. You know, when Star Wars came out, they actually had a Star Wars single record that they would play on popular radio stations.
Mm.
And it, you know, it's just a whole compilation.
I hate the words too.
It had a whole compilation of the John Williams score for Star Wars, mm-hmm. all within whatever 2 or 3 minutes, and it was a very popular thing, even before the movie came out. So, if you're lucky enough, and producers hire the talent for the shows, if you're lucky enough to get somebody like Jerry Goldsmith or John Williams or any of the others, you know, it's a pretty much of a guarantee that if you do your job right, the music's going to really carry it.
Mm. Yeah, that's powerful. So we got a little bit of time here still left. Do we have any other things that we were, any other questions anybody was wanting to ask? Because
it was funny that we were talking about John Williams, because I was going to actually ask if you have met him.
No, I never met John Williams. He's like on the other side of the planet from me production wise.
Yeah.
I did meet the director of photography, you know, because usually storyboard artists are like in a studio while the production company's out shooting it.
Yeah.
And so I did meet Dean Cundé, who is the director of photography on Back to the Future. Mm. And we had a really nice exchange. I've met a few of the actors in the shows.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was really funny. When I did Star Trek The Next Generation, mm-hmm. we had an art department upstairs above one of the main sound stages, and I heard that all the actors were being assembled to talk to the producers and so on. So I had to run my butt down there and meet everybody because I wanted to, because I'm such a geek.
Yeah.
So, you know, some of them I knew, you know, but Patrick Stewart I knew because I just watched Dune, you know, the original Dune.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And down on stage, he was actually looking at the bridge. We used to, you know, for the, this was working on the Star Trek The Next Generation. The bridge that we used for the battle bridge was part of the original bridge from mm-hmm. Star Trek The Motion Picture.
Okay.
And and they had that set still up. And he was looking through the view screen window into the bridge set. And I just walked up next to him and I said, how's your training going with Paul Atreides? And he looked at me and he smiled and he said, very well.
That's so cool.
Patrick was very funny. He came up to the art department. And, you know, they all obviously had scripts and they marked their scripts up in whatever way is personal for them to be able to memorize their parts. And Patrick came up and said, excuse me, everyone. He says, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm looking for a colored marker. Does anybody have any colored markers that I might use to mark my script? And so my co-worker, Rick Sternbeck, came up with a whole box of markers. And he says, oh my, there's so many colors. And I said, Patrick, you can have one, but there's a catch. And he says, always the catch.
And I said, so cool.
And here it is. I want to get a picture of you and me in costume.
Wow.
And he looked at me and he goes, you have a costume?
That's so cool.
Very funny. Yeah.
Wow.
Great stuff.
That is.
So one more question and then Levi's got one.
You can actually have three more questions.
Okay. Oh, cool. So I was just thinking, like, have you ever had like a moment where you've been like maybe out in public and or something, and maybe from just in passing, maybe you saw some kid playing with like a DeLorean or a like some sort of piece of something that you worked on, and you're just like, oh, that's pretty cool. Like, what does that feel like to like just be like to have something so recognizable?
Yeah, the kind of see something that you helped design and
And it's just such an impact on everything, yeah, you know?
And just see it out in the wild and someone using it or watching it.
In the wild, like in nature, like they're, yeah, in the woods and they're playing with the DeLorean.
Probably not in the woods.
Yeah, yeah. No.
No. Just like but, out in the world and seeing.
I imagine that you had some stoic look of like, yes, you're welcome. Just kidding. No, you won't do that. But
the thing that I have to hold myself back from is going up and saying, would you like me to sign that?
Yeah. That makes complete sense.
Yeah.
I've got one here on my desk right now, actually. I could send it to you if you want.
That's such a random thing, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. It's who just, are you?
It's just so cool to like to be talking to someone that like has had a huge impact on pulp culture, and you know, and be able to like have almost an anonymity, I guess is the word, because you know you're not
anonymity.
Yeah, like you could walk into a Walmart and see a like a DeLorean and be like, yeah, hey, I helped design that, and someone would be like, what? You really did that?
Wow.
Something.
Yeah.
But
they would just tell me to go away. Yeah, it's I'm happy in the fact that whoever has these toys enjoys them, you know.
Yeah.
So that's cool. I'm happy that they were cool enough to make toys from.
Yeah. Man, that's just awesome.
But talking about being in public, the most bizarre thing, now that you mention it, that really ever happened to me was I was with my family and we were actually at a museum. Well, that's when we were living in California, some museum in California that had an exhibit of the props from the movie Alien.
Oh, that's cool.
And yeah. So it was awesome because they had like the big mother alien figure. They had some other stuff, the eggs and whatever. And they had that machine that Ripley got in to fight fight with the mother, you know,
like the biotech thing.
So just one more question. So what
one
I know we want to, I have tons more, but we're getting cut off.
Yeah. So what exactly are you doing now?
Talking to you guys.
Well, like, are you
career wise?
Take two.
Yeah.
Actually I'm doing a couple of commissions. I'm retired, officially retired, but
you got grandbabies.
I'm sorry. So many things went through my head right then. It just sucked all the words out.
Is that right?
So was take three.
So what are you doing right now?
Retired.
Yeah.
Oops.
I'm sorry.
Go take ahead. Four. Take five. Actually, I'm retired right now, but I take on commissions every now and then just to keep my hand moving, my brain going. I enjoy designing still.
And then you have grandbabies too, right? Like you hang out with them.
I have multi grandbabies.
Oh, wow.
We just came back from visiting one of our daughters who gave us our 14th grandchild.
Wow.
14.
And we're actually, so far. And we're actually going to out of state to visit our oldest grandchild. Who gave us our first great grandbaby?
Wow, that's so cool. 14 though, man, that's a lot. So, but
yes.
Well, we hate to do this, but it's time to wrap up. So, thank you again so much for your time and just being able to share with the kids, and then letting my little inner child come out a little bit and kind of pick your brain a little bit about, you know, what it's like to be, well, you who has created these amazing things. I still have more questions about Indiana Jones and everything, but we ran out of time, so.
We'll do a part two.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay, sounds great.
I'm down.
You tell us when and we'll do it. Yep. That'd be great. So, well, thank you again. And this is Jason.
Levi.
Doc.
Signing off from Youth Force Chronicles. Thanks a lot.
Well, and Andrew.
Oh, and Mr. Yes. And Andrew. Yes, and Andrew. Sorry.
Live long and prosper.
There you go. All right. Thank you.
Are you ready?